You're listening to the Geek Saga podcast. This episode features audio that was recorded at a discussion panel at DragonCon 2024. Please consider backing us at patreon.com/geeksaga_entertainment for early access to these podcasts and other perks.
I want to talk about the rules of this panel. If you have questions, please do not shout them out. And if somebody's giving a speculation that you think is amazing or stupid, do not shout that out either, because some of that's going to come from us, and it's just going to be out of hand. So the reason why I say that is we don't want crosstalk, and so if you are going to have a question that you're going to ask, we're going to have microphone. I think we've got one set up over there. We've only got one. So if you've got a question that you want to ask, and you know that you're going to go ahead and do that, if you want to go ahead and queue up over here, we can do that. Eventually, if it's difficult for you to move to get over to the other side, raise your hand and we will find a way to make this work. The next thing is, if you have trouble hearing a panelist in the back, please do not be bashful. Speak up, because it's the microphones are a little wickety. And so just let us know that we're not talking into them well enough, and we will correct that error. So please do not think that you're the jerk if you raise your hand and say, can you speak up? Just do that. That's okay. Do not speak up with feedback on other people's ideas. You may feel free to organically laugh. What's that over there?
I can't hear you.
Oh, there's nothing I can do about that. We're going to have to do our best for you guys over there in the corner. If you can't hear us like this, Christina?
We will attempt to eat the mic.
Now for the content. If you have not read up to the end of at least the end of the Rhythm of War, you are in high peril.
You're in the wrong panel.
You have made a life choice.
Yeah.
Okay. Second, if you really haven't read up to the end of Sunlit Man, you're also making a life choice. Okay. I don't think there's anything relevant after that. Those are published works. Now, the question that I know people are already hesitantly asking is, what about that stuff that Brandon has put up on the website or has otherwise published in other forum? And the answer is, I have no idea what you're talking about, and neither do you. We are respecting the sanctity of the December 5th release date and those who want to hold to that sanctity. So some people prefer to experience the book as an entire work. Christina and I were not afforded that privilege. We are going to honor that rule here today. So if you've read chapters, I think, what are we up to now? Chapter 7, something
nine.
Like that?
Nine.
We're up to chapter 9? Nope, that's not true. That is not true. Chapter 9 does not exist in this dojo. Neither does chapter 1. So, all right, I'm going to go ahead and start unless Jimmy tells me not to. 3, 2, 1, no objection seen or heard. We're going to get started. Okay. All right. So we're going to go ahead and introduce our panelists here. I'm Billy Todd. I'm the moderator. I have for 10 years-ish been the track director for Sanderson Track at JordanCon. The most recent book at that time was Words of Radiance. And so it's been quite a journey to this, we'll say, intermediate destination for us. I have the privilege and curse of being a beta reader for Brandon, which means that we will be engaging in speculation panel, to which I already know the answers.
Yes.
And so I'm telling you this right now so that you understand that if somebody asks a question and I start giggling or laughing or smiling, it's because I either think that you're directly on target or you've said something ridiculous, and there's no way to know the difference. So we're going to have a fun time with that. Next up, Christina.
I am Christina Goodman. I am also a beta reader for Sanderson. I started working as a beta reader for Rhythm of War, and I am a mental health specialist expert, whatever. Expert. We'll use the word loosely.
Subject matter expert.
Subject matter expert. Thank you. They do actually pay me for some of this, unlike the general beta population. But I do beta for other works as well. For the secret projects, I betaed the Wizard's Guide to Medieval England. So I got to do the non-Cosmere one. Go me.
Tara.
Hi guys, I'm Tara. You can find me online at a Geek Saga. I mostly do Song of Ice and Fire, Game of Thrones, House of the Dragon stuff with this track, but I finally got myself snuck onto a Sanderson panel last year for Tress, so I'm glad Jen allowed me back onto this very important panel.
It was, yeah.
Kevin A. Davis. I write contemporary fantasy, 16 novels, and magic in the modern world, and my favorite reading is Sanderson, right along next to Robert Jordan. So, love being on the panel, even if Billy's on it.
Yeah.
We do work together at Jordan Cox.
Yeah. Kevin, our buds. We're going to start by making fools of ourselves up here, and then everybody else will have an opportunity too, we promise. So I'm going to start with our panelists, and I'll start with Kevin first. We'll go to that direction.
See?
We're going to ask questions of panels, and for those of us who are beta readers, any answer we give is going to be, or any discussion we have here is going to be us basically a year ago. So you're talking to the past versions of ourselves. Whatever our state was a year ago, that's
more
that's
than
what we
a year
know.
Ago.
More, oh yeah, that's true. You were in two betas. Yeah, so it's been a while for Christina. But I'll say as of the end of us reading the Secret Projects is where we're at here. So Kevin, my question for you is, what do you really want? This is different from expect. What do you want to see happen? We'll say, what's the most important character development that you're really eager to? Because I know character development is a really big thing for you.
It is.
What's the number one character beat that you really hope to see in book five?
It's going
to
be around Shallon. I really want to see that whole arc explode. That's going to be my
and what is an exploding Shallon character arc look like?
She has been struggling to get to the level she's at. She's battled against the Ghostbloods, where we're just everything has been a trial, and she's had successes. You look at Yasna, you look at all of them, they've had their moments where they've been able to break through and truly shine, and she has in a lot of things, but I still feel like there's a level, yeah, you're fifth if you want. You know, we're going to get to that point where I'm not sure how, but I keep looking at the title, Wind and Truth. And I look at Kaladin and Shallon. So it's like, in my mind, that is where I want to really see the explosion. I want to see something over the top, and I don't know what it is, but that's what I want to see.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Tara, what about you?
Just, this is a little bit of a side, but see, I look at the title, Wind and Truth, and I see Kaladin and Seth. Yeah. But all that said, I want my perfect cinnamon roll Adolin to become a radiant and not be a Jedi anymore. Like, I know that's probably like the weakest answer speculation wise, but it's both what I expect and what I just want with every part of my being.
So your answer was you want Adolin to, I couldn't hear over the game.
Yeah. I want my perfect cinnamon roll Adolin to be an official radiant.
To become a radiant.
Yes.
Christina, what were you hoping to see in book five from a character standpoint?
I have always loved Renarin, and I wanted so much to see more with Renarin before we end up in the back five. So, because we know that rumors that in the back five that he has a more of a point of view story. So I was really looking forward to that.
Yeah. I get no points for this one. Mine was Kaladin. congratulations, Billy, you're not here for your creativity. I really want to see Kaladin. I wanted to see Kaladin take the fifth ideal, right? I'm sure we'll get into thoughts about what that ideal might be, how that might express itself, but I really wanted to see that because it's clear at the end of book four that Kaladin is reaching a pivot point in his character arc, and I don't know where that's going. And so that's the thing that I was most excited to see was what does a pivot for Kaladin look like in a way that still makes sense for the sort of progressions we've seen for the Ravens. I didn't believe going into this book that he wasn't going to progress. Right, and so the suspense for me was, what does progression look like with Kaladin having made the decisions that he's made at the end of book four? So then, next question. What character developments do you really not want to see? Character development that you really dread. It's plausible. We're going to stick with plausible here, okay? It's a plausible character development that you really don't want to see in book five. If this happens you will be sad to see it. We'll start with Kevin again.
Dalinar's sacrifice.
No, do not want.
I'm sorry, but I just, it's too much of the personality of the people who, you know, not that most of them wouldn't, but it's so built into him. So along with, you know, where I'm thinking things might go, I can just see this, and it's like I don't I don't want that. I, you know, I want everyone to be happy, you know? Well, fuck Moash, but...
Yeah!
You know, there's a lot of things that you want to see, but that's something that would... I'm afraid. Yeah. There's an internal fear on it, and a dread, and I just keep pushing away, like, you don't know. Then right. I look at Billy, and he gives me those eyes.
Yeah. Tara?
I mean, mine is kind of similar to yours because it's not really character development to say you don't want a character to die, but I hadn't really ever thought about this, but I saw some theories recently when I was looking up and making sure I was like refreshing myself because it has been a while since I read the early books, and I saw some theories that came up that Kaladin is going to die like the hero's death, and I was like, what? No, that is anti everything about Kaladin's arc, and I refuse to believe that this is a thing that will happen, but I know it's not really a character development thing, but it's still like... with Dalinar, it's one of those things where I'm not the biggest Dalinar fan, honestly. Like, I respect the character arc, but I've kind of always expected him to die. But when I saw these Kaladin ones, I was like, wait, what? No. No. Absolute opposite of what should ever happen, so.
Moash redemption arc.
I refuse to believe that's on the table at all, okay?
Because I know that he could pull it off because he had already done that with Elikar. Yes. By the time Elikar dies in Oathbringer, I was heartbroken. And I was like, I just want to still be able to say fuck Moash.
I'm going to invoke moderator privilege here and give two answers. One of which has already been given and the other one has not. In order of priority, my number one character fear going into book five was for Dalinar's safety. And by which I don't just mean his physical safety, but I have the curse of being a lawyer.
Mm.
And,
I'm sorry.
I have the curse of being a lawyer, which means when I see a human make a contract with a deity in the span of 5 minutes. And even though there were some details that were worked out off camera, right? I don't have the feel goods about that. Book five. The Contest of Champions is something that bothers me for Dalinar because we know that Dalinar is not really big on delegating things. And Dalinar is setting himself up here for something that could go very wrong. I am going into book five extremely apprehensive about this. I also really was afraid that Brandon might double down on Moash being a jerk. And by double, I mean like quadruple and triple and quadruple down on this. I actually have always been on the track that Moash is an extremely redeemable character on the scale of the rules that the Stormlight Archive has taught us, even though we don't want him to be. None of us want him to be, but under the rules of Stormlight, he absolutely can be. And the fact that journey is difficult for us as a reader is sometimes the point.
Yep.
And I wasn't sure that Brandon, I wasn't sure which way Brandon was going to go, but I was pretty sure we were going to get some sort of movement on that track going into book five. And I want to see a Moash redemption arc because screw you guys. I want to see a Moash redemption arc because if you think that a person is irredeemable, that's the point of a redemption arc, right? It's not really a redemption arc if you haven't already decided that they're past redemption. That's just sort of my soapbox. But I don't know if it's Brandon's soapbox. And so going into book five, I did not have, I wasn't sure which way, which of these two philosophies was going to prevail. We'll all find out together. Yeah. whether that comes up at all. Okay, now, we've talked about character. Let's talk about plot. Plot things that you really were hoping to see, which is different from character development. Plot, setting developments, that sort of thing. What's the big sort of like cool plot development, lore sort of thing, whether it was something gets revealed or maybe something happens, or like what's the sort of thing that you are expecting to see in book five? Not necessarily what you want to see in book five. Let's start with Tara.
Or with me this time.
Gosh, I guess this is kind of character, but to me it's more plot. The confirmation, or I guess maybe not, that I'm not going to pronounce the name right because I did not listen to the books. I read them.
Oh,
so Chanarak, the Herald.
There are 15 ways to pronounce it.
Okay. Well, I was like, I'm not going to pronounce this right because I didn't listen to the Herald.
From DragonCon through in 2019 was you pronounce it however you want to.
There we go. But the
Star Trek rule, whoever says it first gets it.
But anyway, confirmation or maybe not about her being Shallan's mother and the reason why she tried to kill Shallan.
Whoa.
That's a thing.
I am not a beta reader, okay? This is just a theory. Yeah,
that's a theory that you expect to be.
I know it's probably maybe a little more character driven, but to me it's also a plot point because I think that if Shallan's mother is a freaking herald, like right. What else is going to come from that?
If that were true, that would be a very relevant thing to know.
Yes. Exactly.
Hey, Kevin.
What I would really, and this ties into Sunlit Man. There's too much information coming in through Sigil, about Hoyg, the Shard, all of those components. So I'm trying to wrap my head around it. I don't have it formulated. I don't have a nice, clean line. But we watch what at the end, Hoyg, getting sort of vacuumed up some of the memories. And on the other side, he is talking to an audience and playing with copper coins. And I'm like, there's too much going on here for me to be sure about what's going on here. And I'm literally being told, don't believe what you see. By the guy that I'm listening to. So I'm like, okay. So leaving that piece in place and then having Sigil come back and say, and all the stuff with the shard and I lost my friend and I got a new one. I'm like, what happened? Okay. So I'm not sure where those pieces line up.
Right.
Okay. But if I'm doing a story, I have these sometimes an idea here, a thing here and there, and eventually I'll come through and arc those to how they get to that point. And that's what I feel like. I feel like I have three post-its on a wall. Mm-hmm. That's where I'm at.
Yeah, there's some sort of constellation that hasn't been drawn, right? Where we have a couple of star dots, and one of them is Sigil and all of his nonsense. And how do you get from here to there?
Yes.
Yeah. Your statement is you expect some sort of sketch of that, or at least some sort of.
Hoyt's gonna pull some shit.
Yeah. Yeah, I did expect that going into this.
I don't think we even need to wrap a decision that Boyd's going to get into. But I am going to pass on this one because I can't.
You have the right to tap out at any time. Okay.
Yeah. No. No.
I'll tap in on this one because if there's anything that I am very good at, it's being very wrong about Brandon Sanderson books, especially in the future. And so one thing that I was expecting going into book five was that at the end of book five, someone will be holding the Shard of Honor. Yeah. That was a thing that I was going in with an expectation of. Who that person is, I have a suspect list. There are characters that I can name that would not surprise anybody in here, right? And that was my expectation going into book five. And luckily, since I'm still a year and a half ago, I had no idea what happened. So I think, do we have questions on it? So, yeah.
You're not even at the mic.
Yeah, I'm waiting. So
it's
they
not
can
official.
See.
Yeah, okay. Go to the mic. All right, go to the mic.
I asked you a question a couple of months ago and you didn't answer it. So we have the original oath pact. And now we have a Dalinar contract. Which one takes precedent? Even if Dalinar loses, if Tawn is killed, will that seal Odium back?
That sounds like a question for the Arcanists. certainly me of 18 months ago would have had absolutely no opinion on that. And if I had an opinion now, I wouldn't be able to give it. So I'll pass. I'll pass. That's not a rapper. That's a what?
There's two contracts out there now.
What's that? Yes, there are two contracts out there. So under American jurisprudence, under American jurisprudence, the most recent contract that expresses the will of the parties is the one that controls. If it is intended to supersede the ones that came before. If it is not, if it's silent on whether it supersedes the one that came before, then who the hell knows what it is. Right? Let's go with Tara. Tara, do you have any sort of comment on Seth's question?
I mean, no, because again, like, I think, what is contract law on Rishar?
Right.
You know?
Like, whose jurisdiction even controls?
Yeah. Right?
Like, if you, I will indulge this just a slightly bit more. If you have a contract dispute in under American jurisprudence, there are basically two big questions you have to answer up front. The first question is what court can even hear this? Like, what state?
Yeah.
What state is it going to be? Georgia? Is it going to be Alabama? Is it going to be Tennessee? And then the question is, whose law applies? Is it Georgia law? Is it Tennessee law? Is it the law where the case is held? Is it the law where the contract was signed? Which law applies? And there's a whole, this is a super complicated topic in law school, and I didn't even take it because it's a mess. Okay. Now, if you apply that to a contract between a mortal and a deity, who even has jurisdiction over this question?
It was deity, deity, and then person.
So you have the oath pact, right, which
yeah.
is deity to deity,
yeah.
and then you have a person and a deity. And is Dalinar even able to overwrite a contract with between two deities? Probably not, right? But on the other hand, promises have power on Roshar. So it's like, well, which one controls? We don't know.
Well, hey, whoever holds honor,
or maybe whoever holds honor can abrogate it, right? Like, you just don't know. You just don't have it.
Instead of a silly question, I wanted a to hell question.
Yeah, no, that is definitely a what the hell question.
Yeah, I'm not even going to tip it, not because I don't have anything, you know, I can't say anything. It's because I don't even understand what you're asking.
Kevin, do you want to torture this anymore or go to the next question?
Very quick. Yeah, I don't think that we have, I think that has been considered by Hoyt when they were first, and Yasna, when they were first discussing the contract. And if there was that hole, they would have caught it.
Next question. Get us away from that, please.
Well, I'll change my thing to get away from it then. I haven't heard anyone mention or comment cultivation yet,
yep.
and I am incredibly curious about if we might see the, I can't think of her name, the one who turns promises into weird wishes.
The Night Watcher.
/ any kind of bigger impact coming from cultivation. It's hard for me to even imagine what it could look like.
So, further down on my list of, like, things that I was expecting to see, or, like, weird plot things, or, you know, whatever, lore, or whatever, I would say, like, maybe fifth or sixth down on the list of things I was expecting going into book five was like, oh, maybe we'll get some sort of something cool about cultivation in this book. And I was much more worried about, you know, Dalinar and other things. But cultivation is definitely something that had my curiosity going into it. And the problem that I have with ranking it higher on my expectation list is I don't know where cultivation fits into all this.
Yeah.
Right? And so I don't know how important cultivation is to the first five versus the back five, right, going into book five. I don't know yet. And so that was sort of my personal take on that going in.
This may, I guess, answer the last question that I didn't answer. Not that one, but because we see cultivation had hands in the ascension of Terravangian. And there's all these constructs of the old magic connected to Dalinar and Lyft.
Yep.
I'm just fascinated by by her, by cultivation, by all of the implications that has, the Night Watcher, and who's tied to whom. And it seemed like she was setting things up in a certain way, especially with Terravangian. Yeah, so it was the what's up with that.
Sure.
I mean, mine's similar to yours in that cultivation essentially has three pieces on the board right now. Terravangian, Lyft, and Dalinar. And while they're, I guess maybe calling them pieces on the board is a little bit hyperbolic. She has had very close, you don't think so? Okay. But she's had such close ties with all three of them that I'm with you too, that I don't know that because we don't know what she's going, what part cultivation might play in the era two, essentially. I don't know how much is going to necessarily be resolved, but I do think there's no way cultivation would not have three pieces on the board in Rishar if it wasn't going to come to some sort of fruition in this book.
This has been one of my favorite little areas, and I love the whole old magic. So I have like three. She made the play to go ahead and get rid of an erase, just for that one thing. Simple, neat, maybe not well thought out, right? Not too sure about that one. Two, she's got far more devious machinations than I can possibly imagine, and I'm about to see that play out. Three, a goal of merging the shards, and how that would look, and how that would play out, I am not sure, but, you know, reconstituting honor, blending maybe three now. So I've gone all over the place with cultivation as far as what could possibly be it. From the most simplistic, innocent, I just need to get this guy off my table because he's going to be a problem, to mini-me kind of deviation that I have no idea, you know, what's going on. So I am so excited to see where this does play.
Yeah.
That I can't wait.
One of the things that I've always sort of had in my head about cultivation is that cultivation means cultivation, right? So it's like she's a gardener. And I don't know, I don't feel like I have a good enough understanding of cultivation psychology to know how active a gardener she is,
mm-hmm.
right? My grandmother was frequently accused of benign neglect. That was the phrase that was used to describe her garden, benign neglect of her garden. And so her garden grew, but no one can really say it was cultivated, right? And cultivation implies a certain level of activity, but we don't know what level of activity that is, right?
Yep.
And so,
and she has cultivated, to use pun, a reputation of not being directly involved. You know, the Night Watcher is the one who does everything, and then we find out that she was directly involved in three that we know.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right. Next question.
What's going on in the Horn Eater Peaks? I'm really interested in that. Like, I really feel like we're going to see it in, like, the volcanoes and, like, the end of Lost Metal. What do y'all think is going to go on there?
Why? Explain to me why the end of Lost Metal is relevant to that question.
That was when Milan went into Shadesmar for the redheaded refugees.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah.
Redheaded.
Redheaded refugees. There's volcanoes there. We know there's a perpendicularity
there.
And we haven't seen it yet. And it just kind of feels like we've talked about it a lot at this point. I'm ready to see it.
It does feel like one of those sorts of things that's waiting to show up one day.
Yeah.
Right? And I have to confess to you, it's not a thing that was really something that I cared about going into book five. Whether I care about it after book five, I'm not in a position to say.
Well, wasn't before he wrote Dawn Shard, wasn't it between that story and a story about Rock? So, like, maybe if it's not in book five, we'll get a novella.
That is one of those things that I think Brandon has in his State of Sanderson kept, like, pushing off into the future. He's like, eventually one day I'm going to write a Rock story, and this is sort of like a hook into that, right? But I don't know.
About the same level as you. I'm always having an interest in all the little, you know, extra components. But this has been one of the ones that is, like, curious, but I didn't feel like was going to be such a pillar of what was coming up next that I needed to put a lot of thought into it.
Yeah, it's one of those things where if it comes up, I'm not going to be surprised, but it's not like consuming my thoughts.
And I will enjoy it.
Yeah, right.
I think it's probably really important, but is it important to these specific five books is the real question,
yeah,
maybe.
Right, don't know. I think it's a fair question that's being asked, but it's not one that occurred to me going into the books, or going into book five, and so I have no ability to comment. Next question.
So one of the things we've seen through the first couple books has been a change in how the citizens of Roshar have interacted with the Great Shells. They've come up, and they've been horribly killed, years and years of them. Do you think that the change in the ecological niche they occupy will have a more lasting effect through later books? We've lost years' worth of these adult Great Shells because they've been very efficiently separated from their gem hearts. And do you think that will be
separated from their gym hearts? Do we think that's relevant? Tara?
It's certainly something that I'm interested in knowing more about, but it's not something I've really thought much about, mostly because I also, you know, historically we look at, like, I don't know, the just absolute decimation of the entire, let's say, buffalo population in the United States, where obviously that was a little bit more something that affected, you know, indigenous peoples who used every part of the buffalo, and it was super important to their culture as well as their food sources and whatnot. But all I know is I felt really freaking bad when it's like, oh yeah, by the way, you guys have just kind of decimated this entire population of Great Shells, and all because you just needed those gem hearts so bad. Like, really? I don't know. Do I hope something will come from it? I hope they at least feel freaking bad. Like, jerks.
I can see it being a pinch.
I can see it being what?
A pinch point.
a pinch point. Yeah.
For the overall fall of humanity that's going through, to suddenly be, you know, not have new a lot of new not this cache of constant, you know, accessible gem, you know, stones. Do I think it's going to be a major play on the board? I don't think so, but does it bother me? Yes, because people who don't like cats just kill off, you know, all kinds of animals.
Obviously can't comment as to whether or not this is relevant plot point number five, but I have sort of thought of this as one of those things that sort of thematically sets the tone for the culture of the Alethi, right? Mm-hmm. Of these guys are basically Klingons, and they like to extract, you know, mineral resources, and that they're just going to do the thing because they don't, none of this is based on long-term sustainable thinking for their kingdom, right? Or set aside Roshar, right?
Right.
So it tells us, the fact that this is an ingrained part of what they're doing in the culture tells us something about the leadership of the Alethi without really telling us that, right? So it tells us, it gives us sort of a addition by subtraction as to the psychology of the Alethi leadership. And that I think is an important thing set up in the first book that carries through, you know, all the way to now.
And before, when at the end of Rhythm of War, there's a change in the dynamic between the listeners and the Great Shells.
Yeah.
So that one was a fascinating concept. And then how that plays out. Yeah.
Next question.
Just to merge with the last question real quick, the Everstorm and the Highstorm hit the Shattered Plains, which is the only known location of the Great Shells, at once.
Mm-hmm.
So it could have annihilated a lot of their population in the first place. But the question I had was, since the second series, the second five books of Sanderson has been confirmed to be so close to the first one, I have a suspicion that they're going to fail and that the contract will go to Odium. How do you guys think, in a way, that will play out, aiming more towards those two and then past you guys?
Kevin?
I still have a belief that we're being tricked on too many levels. But I could see a point where Odium's win is actually is him losing, and that's his play. I can see cultivation coming into the play. I can see Hoid coming into the play. That's my problem, is I have those multiple layers coming into it. So I can't just say a loss is a loss, because I don't believe that it's not, I guarantee you, it's not going to be that clear cut, that we're just seeing, oh, you know, either this happens or this happens, and that's our choices of what Book 5 is going to be about. Book 5 is going to be about something we're not even considering yet. So do I think that Odium will get what he wants? I don't think so. I think something that is outside of Odium's desires will happen. I could be wrong, and this could be all of it, and everyone runs away, but it just doesn't feel like that.
Sure.
It's not something that I yeah.
Christine, do you want to touch this more?
I mean, are you asking, like, where things are going in the back five?
I'm asking more of opinion than fact of where you guys thought it was going, because I believe that they're going to lose, and that what's going to happen is the next five books will be the redemption. Like, with the Horn Eater refugees, since Lost Metal takes place in the future, I feel like it's more going to be common that they lose, and there's going to be refugees from Roshar going all over, and that's why from Sunlit Man everyone's afraid of Rosharans.
Interesting. Well, now you just brought an extra dynamic in the back question.
Ellie?
Yes.
Raffo me.
I will not Raffo.
Damn.
I'm going to rescue the Raffo here. I think there are two ways. There are different ways to think about the structure of the Stormlight Archive. Mm-hmm. Let's say that we're looking at a big transition point at the end of Book 5. Is that transition point Frodo doesn't throw the ring into the fire? Is that transition point we just cut off Sauron's finger? Right? Mm-hmm. We don't know which age we're in. We don't know which book we're in. And we don't know, right? But you could easily imagine a Lord of the Rings story continuing after Frodo says, no, I'm not going to throw it in. because we had that. It's exactly what the humans did. I'm not going to throw it in. But we got this story. Lord of the Rings is basically the back five, right? You know, if you say, based on what you just said, right? Based on what you just said, if I say I'm going to cut Sauron's finger off, okay, right? Then I could easily set that as the middle point of a 10-book story, or I could be Robert Jordan. Okay. I could be Robert Jordan. I could be Robert Jordan, and halfway through my 13-book series, I have a giant damn battle, and it's really cool, but it doesn't really serve as a big transition point, right? Except for maybe a character or two. And so my expectation going in to book five was, I don't see Brandon doing the Robert Jordan thing where halfway through the series is not a big pivot point. He's told us there's a pivot point here. He's told us there's a reason why there's a break between these two. And so the question is the reason because now there's a reason to hope, or is now there's a reason to dread? And my expectation going into book five was, this is not going to be a happy ending for book five. That was my expectation going into book five.
I know he likes to play at the heartstrings, so that's why I've been thinking about that.
Right. Yeah, this is back to my whole thing of, like, I'm really worried for Dalinar, right? I'm really worried for Dalinar. I'm really worried Brandon's going to say, okay, this is the down point in the book five. The back five are going to be, how do we get out of it? That's my expectation going in.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Why is soul casting the only surge that survives without the Night's Radiant?
Why is soul casting the only surge that survives without the Night's Radiant? I definitely would not have had any answer to that question.
As far as I can tell.
I'm stipulating to the question. I have no idea.
As far as I can tell.
I mean, I understand what you're asking, and I mean, it's a good question. I have no idea.
I'm just wondering if that's linked in with the whole cultivation complex, because I know she's supposed to have informed about half of the surges. So is that connected to her being involved in a more distant way? Or because as far as I know, that's literally the only surge that they've at least figured out how to use with Fabrials. None of the others seem to exist. Outside of the Night's Radiance.
No, I don't even have a question.
Yeah, that's something I want to think about a little bit, but it's a good point. It's something I definitely want to... Well, I just assumed the Fabrielle connection was it, but you're right. It actually affects the user. So there's something else
there's something
there.
Going on there. Why that one?
Any other comment from the table?
No.
3, 2, 1. Next question.
Assuming that Dalinar is not going to choose himself for a champion, who would be your top pick for Dalinar and Odium's champion, and who do you think is most likely for those two?
Kevin, go first.
Well, I think we got to throw, I'm sorry, who's Cupcake or Cinnamon Roll?
Adolin.
Yeah, that's
Cupcake works too.
Yeah.
I'm calling my Cupcake.
So Swan will fight you for that.
Yeah, so we're going to go ahead and throw him in the pit, and Shallan.
I don't know, honestly. He's trying to annoy. What if it's like Renarin? If we're just going with throwing random characters out there.
That's not random.
Kevin. I don't know. I honestly have not really thought about it because, like you said, Dalinar can't delegate. So I've never expected that Dalinar... I mean, maybe Yasna, but I think that Dalinar can't delegate, so. And as a type A non-delegator, I understand it. Maybe that's why I don't like him very much.
So there was a piece of me going into book five that was like, it's so obvious that Dalinar can't delegate, then that means it can't be Dalinar. And so that means, like, maybe why would Dalinar not delegate? Well, it can't possibly be because of character growth. It's got to be because he's incapacitated or something, right? And so, you know, if Dalinar, for whatever reason, is taken off the board, my guess is, you know, obviously the backups are like Kaladin and Adolin, right? But is Dalinar going to choose his son? But Dalinar is not the one making the choice because he's incapacitated. Would somebody else, like, be able to stand in his shoes? Yasna might be the person that would have to make that choice. I don't know, right? And so the question, but like, I went through all these trees, right? When I was reading that stupid contract, when I was reading that agreement, the first thing I thought was, okay, Dalinar, obviously you think you're going to choose yourself. Who could possibly stand in your shoes on this? And that was where my brain went, like, before I even turned the page in Rhythm of War. Christina, do you want to touch this or not touch it? I didn't think so. Next question.
So in Rhythm of War, we see that Rey's odium gives the weapon to Moash to start killing heralds, like really killing them. Do we think Taravangian Odium is going to keep doing that, and why?
Oh, man.
What was the first part?
His statement was, I believe I'm characterizing your statement correctly, that Raze gave Moash a weapon to go kill heralds. His question is, do we think Taravangian is going to keep at that? Taravangian is going
to really kill them, not send them to damnation, but like...
to actually cut them off.
Yeah. Yeah.
The question was, do we think that's going to happen?
I don't think so. I don't think that was a huge component. I thought I couldn't be wrong, but I didn't see it as being something that was going to be anything other than a pressure point against Dalinar for negotiations. Could be wrong. Maybe there's a bigger plot in there. I don't think Taravangian is going to follow through on that since it's already been played. But it's Sanderson.
Yeah. Tara?
Kind of same. I also think that Taravangian, like, and or Taravangian as Odium, whatever, he's always had his own machinations. And I don't think that, certainly would not have been part of it. And I don't think that he is as malleable as to just like be like, okay, well, I'm going to do this too, just because this was, you know what I mean? Again, could be wrong, but my guess would be no.
Well, I mean, Taravangian proved himself in the first book to be completely ruthless and as justified the means. So if there's a means, like a reason for it.
And a heartbeat.
So my thing at the end of having closed the last page of Rhythm of War, turn the last page, close the book, I have no idea what Taravangian's goals are.
I'm not even sure he knows.
I have no idea. Does he even know? Right. We know that Shardic Intent is a thing, and we also know that Shardic Intent can be powerful, but can have a delayed effect, as we've seen in other instances where shards changed hands. And we don't know the extent to which like there's momentum coming from the push from Raze as to like how much of that's gonna control what Taravangian does. And we don't know how much Taravangian really differs, but we do know that Taravangian is crafty.
Yeah.
Right. Taravangian is crafty. And as I close the book on Rhythm of War, my expectation is that the way that Odium has presented itself and has used the pieces on the board will change. And whether this particular piece on the board is one of the ones that Taravangian would use differently is a good question. Because we know that Moash has viewed his relationship with Raze as one that is with Raze. And we don't know how Taravangian would view that relationship with Moash as an individual. Yeah. Right. And so this is one of the reasons why when I closed the book on Rhythm of War, I thought maybe there's a possibility for Moash redemption arc because the rules have changed. The relationship has changed.
The other part about that is that Taravangian was getting a push from cultivation as well because of the way when he ascended, he was rage personified. So the cleverness side wasn't there. That doesn't mean he's not himself in full as God, but the question of when he became a God, he was full emotion, no the intellectual
side. He was a maximum empathy.
His scales going back and forth between
intellect,
pure rationality, and pure emotion were set to be in line with the Shardic intent and how that would actually affect what he thinks going forward.
Yeah. I guess this is Relaine asking this question.
Yes.
This is going back to Kaladin.
Okay.
And the fifth ideal. Based on premise, we have the Skybreaker's fifth ideal. I am the law. The only fifth ideal that we have on page at this point.
Okay.
That Lirin, in my reading, taught Kaladin all of the ideals of the Windrunners. That you save people who can't save themselves, that you save even people you hate, like Rishon, and that you accept that you can't save everybody.
Right.
So that'd be the first four. But he is adamant, I think, that you can't do the fifth ideal, which is you can't save by destroying. Right? That's the first thing he teaches Kaladin in the first flashback, where there's a girl with a finger that's crushed. You gotta cut the finger off to save the whole girl. You have to sacrifice the finger to save. In that same chapter, he says, you can't destroy,
to save, which I think is really fun. So,
yeah.
My projection for Fifth Ideal is that Kaladin, who has watched Rishon, Amaram, Sadeus sacrifice person after person after person for evil ends, will realize he needs not just to accept that he can't save everyone, but that he has to make the leadership decision to sacrifice someone, something, something other than himself to save, to protect.
For the greater good. Okay.
Ouch. And then you've got Kaladin kind of becoming Terramantian.
Right, so that's the thing, is that a fifth ideal radiant, in theory, can do things that you wouldn't want. I mean, I am the law, is a tyrant decision.
I have questions about that one.
I do think that if Kaladin swears the fifth ideal, it's going to be something leadership related. And to be honest, I hadn't really thought much about it beyond that because I'm leaning toward I don't think he's going to. But I like honestly, the way you describe that and the fact that it is like the decision of a leader, I'm here for it. I'm with you.
Kevin?
I love the analysis. I really hadn't gone through that. I think that's pretty cool. So going through that, you cannot save without by destroying. That brings open some huge elements. I don't necessarily believe sacrifice, but I can see, you know, that goes back to some of the theories of let's reform the honor shard, which, you know, it's that's sort of like my 15-year-old boy kind of mind of like, yeah, and then he makes the shard again and everything's cool, you know?
Somehow. Step two, question mark. Step three, have shard.
Because of that, I'm like, yeah, Sanderson's not a 15-year-old boy. That's not going to happen. Something more. If you want a paper airplane, he's going to give you, like, you know, one of those remote control things that fly around. And you're going to get way more than you expect. So what is it that I can't even imagine that I expect? But I think you might be onto a component. And I'm really dying to see how that plays out. So, no brilliant theories. He's got it. I love it.
My response to that is, cool story, bro. All right. Everyone should pay close attention to this question. Go.
If you throw 10 sticks into a fire and 9 of them burn to ash, was one of them really wet? Or did you merely find the one stick that would not become fire?
In chapter 112, there's a log cabin. Next question.
Please.
So when you start going through the death rattles, the ones that we don't think we have an actual confirmed answer for, a lot of them portray some very apocalyptic imagery and regardless of what happens with the shards themselves, there's still a lot of tension between the listeners and the humans.
Yeah.
And it's pretty easy to make a very large explosion from a very little amount of storm or anti-stormlight or anti-light in general.
Yeah.
One or more cities do not exist at the end of the fifth book.
I mean, I've already seen speculation that Shinnevar, like, is going to be completely destroyed or possibly already is, so, yeah.
Well, I think it's definitely a component. Part of the reason, some people have mentioned refugees, and like I said, there's components, there's pieces that I don't know how they're going to play out. That could be huge. That could be a huge part of it, is we just literally do not have part of Rasharda to be on anymore. And the death rattles, those things drive me nuts. Whose kid is going to get their throat slit? Which one of the kids? Who's it happening to?
Right.
Drives me nuts. Those are horrible to do to people.
So,
yes.
Because you can throw 52 wrong ones in and one right one.
So coming out of Lost Metal, having seen some of the science-y stuff that happens in that book, and having closed the reading Rhythm of War, a reader might speculate that things could get out of hand in book 5. Comma. This was me going into book 5. Going into book 5, I'm like, well, Brandon told us this, and Brandon showed us this, and Brandon showed us this, comma, but I can't get this contract out of my head. And one of the key terms of this contract is there's a clock. And that clock is 10 days.
10 days.
Okay. That clock is 10 days. I remind you, we lost a year between books. Okay. And so I'm sitting there thinking, if there's going to be some sort of crazy thing like this, it could happen as an accident, but it's probably not going to happen because the good guys did something. That's my expectation going into book five. And whether that's a thing that is relevant, because one thing that I'm always super, I've always been this way for 10 years. I've been this way for 10 years. Yep. I've been this way for 10 years that I think I think Brandon sort of over trains us to expect concepts to cross from series to series. And I don't think that necessarily the climax of Mistborn Era 2 is relevant to the climax of Stormlight Era 1. And so these are the thoughts that are washing back and forth in my head before I open book 5, right? And so for me, the tiebreaker is 10 days is a really short clock. And so I'm always looking for that sort of stuff because I like really big earth-shattering kabooms because I think they're really cool. But from a thematic character standpoint, with 10 days, Brandon could write it, but I will say that as a reader going into book 5, I didn't personally expect that. Obviously can't say.
And it could be a pinch point.
Could be a pinch point.
Okay, we've watched in the last book, we had a lot of stressor points that were made so that we had to get to this point. And there's no reason why pinch points wouldn't happen as well to force us into actions and avenues that we don't want to deal with.
The shattered planes are also the results of cataclysmic events, which can be repeatable.
We still don't know what caused
right, that. But we don't know what. Next question. We're going to try to fly through these. It's going to be speed round.
Yeah, so at the beginning of Rhythm of War, Moraes tells Shallan that... or implies that she can't leave the system because she might be too heavily invested, or that too heavily invested people in the stories can't leave their systems. But
right.
He does at one point mention that to Raboniel, you know, you better ponder why would cultivation make an edge dancer that survives off of lifelight instead of stormlight. So would Lyft be able to leave the system, and also would other orders of Dice Radiance, if something were to happen to the High Storm, be able to be created from Lifelight, or would they just be edge dancers?
Certainly going into book 5, I have absolutely no facts on which to answer that question. I would be completely unequipped to answer that question, and whether that's changed as a result of having read book 5, I'm not at liberty to say.
But Sigzel's already moved on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right, but his question's about Lifelight.
Right, but right. Then he blended it with anyone else. So I'm saying Sigzel moved on.
And then also, real quick, do the Vorn traditions have any other impact besides just being a weird cultural thing, or is there going to be some kind of comeuppance that we see because of breaking up the Vorn traditions of men not reading and, you know...
That's a cool question. Next question.
This may be a lowbrow question, but along with Shallan, we have confirmed that she did have a sword before. And was that cryptic?
Was the sword encrypted?
Yes.
Yes.
That was confirmed. Okay.
Testament is confirmed.
Testament is encrypted. Okay. With that in mind, what kind of ideals would a child be able to make along the lines of... Just a child. What are the secrets that they're holding?
I know what he's thinking.
How far could have Shallan gone to one got to a blade, or who knows what,
just pushed his
as a
away.
Child in comparison that now she doesn't remember, or whatever is blocking?
A question that I have, a major question to me, is how does a child have the capacity to swear an oath?
Yeah. Yep.
Specifically with the cryptics.
Set aside the cryptics. Any of the orders. How does a child have the capacity to swear an oath? That's the question I have going into book 5.
How much interaction have you had with kids that have depression? If you have enough, you don't ask that question.
So the question is this. If the idea of the oath is about mutuality of intent and shared and intent, then that intent has to have some sort of...
understanding.
No, whether or not you have... The big question going in is, does the Nahel bond require you to have some sort of adult level of agency in
clearly
order to be
not
bound to it? And that's the question.
Besides,
right,
you're operating off of modern definitions of agency.
That is correct.
But if her mom's a heroine...
Right. That the question is, what in fact is that raises the question: what are the rules of the Nahel bond? Right.
And how are they different for cryptics? Because
Billy,
you
gotta get a book here.
And
they are more personal, at the very least.
Yeah.
It
so
seems.
We're now 1 minute over, and so if you want to hang out for DVD, have until Jimmy kicks you out of the room. So I want to say thank you to our panelists, Kevin.
Thank you for listening to the Geek Saga podcast. If you like what you heard, please check out other Geek Saga entertainment endeavors, including the Sagas and Sass webcast and podcast, and Ice and Fire Con.